welcome to Watching ID. I'm Jill.
And I'm Dick.
Today we're talking about Investigation Discovery's Gone, Season 1, Episode 5, titled Missing Michelle. So, Dick, what'd you think of the episode?
Well, you know, remember last week when we were talking about that episode and I said it was the worst one by far?
Yes.
Well, this surpassed it.
Well, yeah, I kind of see what you're saying.
This was a crap episode. The whole story was very mundane. And the ending, which when we get to it, I'll explain more, I guess. But the ending pissed the hell out of me.
Really?
Oh, I was so angry.
Really? Why were you angry?
Well, it's giving things away.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to save my reasons for anger.
Maybe we should agree that this Gone show is not the one we want to cover anymore for Watching ID. I mean, I think there's only one more episode, so maybe we should do it.
Well, of course we should.
But
I think we signed up to do the series.
Well, yeah.
Maybe we didn't actually
between ourselves.
Maybe we kept our fingers crossed when we signed up to do the series. But I think we should finish it out.
Yeah, but it does seem to be going downhill as far as this isn't really that interesting.
I have to say it's not.
No. I mean, with all the things on ID to watch that are really diabolical and interesting and twisted and mysterious, this just isn't really hitting it for us.
No. I mean, this one is about a woman who disappears, and the mystery of her disappearance is solved several years later.
Well, that's what they all are, right? Kind of.
Kind of, but there's no interest in this one.
Okay. Well, we're going to do it, so let's make our way through it. Maybe we'll find some fun stuff to talk about, but I do kind of agree with you that it wasn't great. I mean, I could kind of relate to the people. You know, I like the interviews with her family, but, you know, they seemed like a good, typical, imperfect family dealing with this unusual circumstance, and that's about it, really.
I would say, yes.
Okay, well, let's do the recap. Are you ready for that?
Ready. Let's do it.
Okay, so Michelle's mom shows Michelle's first birthday picture where she's eating her birthday cake, and she has her fingers in the cake, and she talks about her daughter a little bit. Even though her daughter was missing, she said she was still determined and heartbroken. Now, a policeman says there was a whole gamut of possibilities for this case, and it was even associated with a murder for a while.
Yeah, I mean, there's some mystery involved.
Yes, there is.
That kind of caught your attention.
There was, yeah. And then we've got across the screen, we've got 32-year-old Michelle Whitaker vanished in 2002. It would take 6 years to find out where Michelle had gone. So her mom says, my husband was downstairs in the sunroom, and I said, Chuck, they found her. And she tears up, so that doesn't really give anything away.
No, it doesn't.
No.
So there's a pickup truck driving away with Gone fading across the screen. So we like to do that technique.
Well, you know, and even though the show's been a little bit dull, it really does look nice. It's well done.
It does. I'd have to give it that. The cinematography is, I think, excellent.
Yeah, the whole way it's produced is nice, but the story is lacking.
Yeah, it is in this particular case.
So we see the pickup truck driving away with the word Gone, and then Michelle's mother tells us what happened. We start to hear the story.
Right. They had this huge argument the last day they were together.
Yeah.
And they've been doing these arguments for a while, because Michelle is, early 30s, living at home.
Off and on.
Yeah, kind of rootless and not doing what her parents think she ought to be doing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But this argument was a big, huge one. So Laura, the mother, she's worried that her daughter is making the wrong choices in life.
Yeah, her friends aren't great.
Nope, they're a bunch of slackers. She's only occasionally working. And when she does work, she waitresses in a restaurant. She sleeps in people's cars or on people's couches or in her home with her folks.
So there's not much stability there.
Doesn't look like it, does it?
No, and Laura said that she felt like tough love was her last resort at this point, and she told Michelle she had to leave.
Which wasn't taken very well.
Well, no. Who would take that well?
I guess if you have no steady employment and no place to live, and your mother kicks you out of the house, it's probably a tough one to deal with.
Well, yes. But Michelle did leave. And Laura said that she thought she'd see her in a day or two. She was just mad at her, and she would eventually be back. This was a big fight, but they'd had plenty before.
Yeah, and she's done this before, and she always comes back.
Right, yeah. And she's 32, so she really hasn't found her adulthood. She's acting very immaturely.
Yes, she is.
Yeah.
Which maybe that's part of why I didn't like the episode, because I'm thinking a 32-year-old should be acting more like an adult.
Yeah, right.
But
she had troubles. We'll find out. She was dealing with a lot. And in the following days, there was no word from her. Her mom didn't hear from her.
Not a word.
No.
So she gets a call. Mom does. She gets a call from a friend of Michelle's, whose name is Brentley Cook. And he'd been letting her stay on his couch for the past few nights. So he says, or we learn, nothing's going on between them. He's just helping her out. He's a friend.
That's what the mom says, yeah. And he tells Laura, Michelle's mom, that he hasn't seen Michelle in 2 to 3 nights, and he's becoming worried because she has been keeping in touch, and now he can't reach her. So now Laura starts to get a little worried, too. She starts to think, well, maybe something really is wrong. So she tries to call around people that know Michelle looking for her, with no luck. So now we meet Michelle's sister, Linda, who talks about the day her mom called and told her that her sister Michelle was missing.
Linda knew something wasn't right because Michelle always kept in contact with her. Even if she wasn't speaking to their mother, she and Michelle connected with each other.
Yeah, and they called her Shelley, so it goes back and forth between Michelle and Shelley. Same person.
Same one.
So now we get the flashback, which is usually my favorite part, but we didn't get a lot from this one.
We didn't. I thought it was kind of lacking.
So, 22 years ago in Geneseo, Illinois, Michelle was one of 5 children. So she had 3 older brothers, and then she had a younger sister, Linda. And it's described as an idyllic childhood. Linda says she and Michelle were very close. They even had some of the same friends. And Linda remembers that they'd go to a pizza parlor and an ice cream shop and really have a lot of fun. And she describes her sister, Michelle, as a very giving, kind person, almost to a fault.
Yeah, but then some difficulties arise. They moved to Gastonia, North Carolina, when Michelle was like a 15-year-old.
That's a tough age to move.
Don't move teenagers.
Well, sometimes you have to.
I know you have to, but boy, what a prickly situation that can be.
Yes. Well, it
didn't go well. Speaking from experience.
Yeah. Well, it didn't go well for Michelle.
No. Michelle moved into a high school where she didn't know anybody. Well, of course not. She's new.
Right.
She made friends, but at the same time, she was starting to show some rebelliousness.
Yeah, so maybe she didn't pick the best friends? I'm not sure.
Possibly.
Linda says that Michelle blamed their mother for the move and that her mother was too strict and overprotective, Michelle had said. So she really wasn't getting along well with her mother even back then. She said there's too many rules, and then Linda said that things really started to go downhill for Michelle.
They did. But you know, I'm sure most every teenager thinks that their parents are too strict and restrictive.
Sure, if the parents are doing their job.
Right. So,
yes.
But yeah, so she's saying, she's grouching about all these rules that her parents have, and she's just not looking for any, or not having any freedom that she wants.
Right, yeah. So she's not happy. She starts to kind of slide off track.
Right. Now, there's some interesting stuff. This was kind of cool, I guess. Her senior year, Michelle's thinking about joining the Navy. So she meets with a recruiter, and guess what? She falls in love with him.
I know.
And he's like 6-8 years older than her.
Yes.
So that doesn't sound like a real healthy relationship, but they ended up getting married, for crying out loud.
Well, Laura said that she wasn't sure about this older guy, but he seemed very stable. I mean, he worked, and he was good to Michelle from what she could see. Plus, she thought maybe it would be good for Michelle to have some kind of settling influence in her life because she'd been kind of off track.
Yeah, possibly.
So she tried to support the marriage.
But I'm looking at a 17, 18-year-old with a 23 to 25-year-old. It's a little bit of a difference there.
Yes,
and,
it is.
And if he's doing his job properly, he's not falling in love with a recruit. Or a potential recruit.
Well, right. That probably, you know, you don't just meet and fall in love. There was something going on there. He was coming on to her or at least flirting with her something.
You think?
Which is inappropriate. So that might have been a red flag there that it wasn't going to go well.
Yeah. But at the same time, her mother might have been happy to get her out of the house because of all the strife and
well, that's probably
and contentiousness.
Part of it. Yeah.
So she's thinking, yeah, go ahead, get married. You won't be under my roof anymore.
Could be. I mean, I'm sure it was stressful.
Yeah.
But the marriage only lasted about a year. Things were bad, Laura said, without really specifying what was bad. I mean, we don't even hear if there was infidelity or if he was abusive. We don't even hear what it was about. So it's very vague to me. But she said that her daughter had to get out of the marriage, so it doesn't sound like it was good. Something was going on.
Sounds like, huh?
Yeah.
So after the divorce, Michelle began working part-time as a waitress, and the family moved to Spartanburg, which was an hour south of Gastonia. So Linda relocated to Atlanta. She went to college. She and her sister apparently are headed in opposite directions in life. Michelle's disappointed in what she's doing. She's waitressing. She's not doing too much. Linda, on the other hand, is attending college. Did she ever graduate? Do we know that?
Oh, I don't know.
But different paths, right?
Well, that's where they kind of broke away to different directions in life. And she said that people would tell Michelle that she was smart and talented and she could accomplish things, but Michelle didn't believe them. She really lacked the confidence to do things with her life. We're not sure why, but she just kept making choices that made her life even worse. And even as she got into adulthood, she was still kind of acting like a mixed-up teenager.
She was. She wasn't maturing.
No, no. Laura says it was really tough, as her mother, to deal with that.
Yes. So by age 30, Michelle's continuing to struggle. Having difficulty. She meets this guy after work one night, a 25-year-old named Dave Collins. He's in town visiting family. So she accepts a ride home from him.
Which was a big mistake.
Yeah, because he rapes her.
Yeah, so Michelle calls her mom and is crying and says, I've been raped. And her mom takes her to the hospital and the police, calls the police. And she says that Michelle was really devastated and she was also physically beat up. She had broken bones in her face, she was bruised, and she felt guilty.
Well, yeah.
So this makes her even more messed up.
Well, and besides that, her mother kind of blames her. You know, she's saying, why did you ever get in the car with that guy?
Well,
and that's the last thing in the world you need to hear from your mom.
I know, but she said she was trying to teach her something, that, you know, it's not her fault that she got raped, but she was in risky behavior. She was putting herself at risk. I think that's reasonable. She's 30. She should know better.
Well, yes, she should, but that's not the time or the place for a teachable moment.
Okay, you're right. But I can kind of see where she's coming from.
Well, I can certainly see her frustration with her daughter.
Yeah.
And thinking, Jesus, how could you ever get in a car with a person like this you don't even know?
Right.
But you don't say that to her.
Okay, I might have, to be honest, but I can see how it's not a good idea. But she said she wasn't trying to blame her, but she could tell it really hurt Michelle, and you're right, it was a mistake to say that.
Oh, it was a big mistake.
So she was really upset with her mom over that.
Yeah, I would be.
They're already estranged and have a strained relationship a lot of the time, so this didn't help, obviously.
No, it doesn't.
So Michelle did give the police detailed information about David Collins, and it took a year, but they did find him down in Florida. And he made a deal, and he pled guilty to assault and battery. He was sentenced to 8 years in prison.
Sounds like he got off easy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah,
I mean, this was a violent rape.
Right.
He beat the crap out of her.
Right.
And sexually assaulted her.
Yeah, and he pled down to...
And he got 8 years.
Assault and battery. So he didn't even get convicted of rape.
Yeah.
But, you know, we were talking recently about how most crimes are pled down.
Yeah, that's true.
It's how the system usually works, unfortunately, in some ways.
Yeah, well, I still think he was lucky.
Well, yeah. Now, Linda, Michelle's sister, says that she really felt like Michelle was keeping all of her pain and her trauma inside and just couldn't get past this experience of the rape and this feeling that her mother blamed her, which she already felt guilt and blamed herself. So all this is coming down on her, and she really... probably could have benefited from some therapy.
She certainly could have.
I mean, she's self-medicating with drugs and alcohol.
I would think that if the suggestion of therapy was brought up to Michelle, she would have said no fucking way.
You think so?
Yeah.
Well, maybe at that point, but... It might have helped.
It could have helped.
Well, so she's growing increasingly unstable, according to Linda, at this point. And then after she has this big fight with her mother in 2002, when she's 32 years old, she really seems to be gone for good. Laura went to the police, who said that Michelle was an adult, and they couldn't help her find her because she wasn't at risk. You know, she'd left before. She had issues. They really didn't think that anything had happened to her at that point.
Yeah.
But I mean, Laura...
It's tough. She's an adult.
Right. But Laura didn't give up at that point.
She stuck up for her daughter.
So Laura goes to her friend, who's a sergeant at the police department in Spartanburg. His name is Alan Wood. And she tells him the issue. And he tells her he's not a lot more help.
Yeah, he tells her basically the same thing.
Yeah.
She's an adult. Give it some time. Reach out to her friends and acquaintances. See if anyone's heard from her.
And this is because Michelle has led a transient lifestyle.
That's right.
So it's not that unusual. But Laura really feels that this is different. So finally, on August 21st, she files a missing persons report. And investigators begin to look into the disappearance because now they're starting to think, well, maybe something really is wrong. Nobody's heard from her. So they did investigate Michelle's ex-husband, and then they went and talked to her family and friends. And they found the last person who had seen Michelle, and he had a criminal history.
Yeah, she falls for those types.
Yeah, well, I don't know if she fell for him, but she spent time with him. Okay.
She hangs out with these types.
Well, I think the places she's going and stuff, that these are the kind of people that are there.
Yeah.
So Michelle was gone for 2 weeks when this man came forward.
Yes. Now, he wasn't tracked down. He volunteered this information.
He did.
So that's, to my thinking, to his credit.
Yes. Now, his name was Doug Gilmore. He'd met Michelle at a pool hall 11 days after she had the fight with her mom. Now, Doug was a biker. He was part of a biker's club, but it was more of a social club. It wasn't like a criminal enterprise.
He wasn't a Hell's Angel, in other words.
No.
Okay.
He said he drove her around on his bike for a while and that she spent the night on his couch.
Yeah, and then the next morning he dropped her at a truck stop because she said she was on her way to Myrtle Beach.
Yeah, so police, now they have a place to look, right? They can investigate the truck stop and they can investigate Myrtle Beach. So this lead gave them at least some place to
look.
Yeah,
I mean, they've got some more information. I mean, we've got this first guy who let her spend the first couple nights after she left her mom's home with him.
Yes.
But then we got about a week where we don't know what she was doing. And then this guy, Doug, let her spend the last couple nights and dropped her off on her way to Myrtle.
Well, even after the rape, I think she was still a little too trusting going with this guy. Because Doug...
Yeah, Doug was a guy she just meets.
Right,
it's
right.
Not a long-term acquaintance, right?
No, so that's not very smart. She's not being very careful anyway.
Nope.
So Laura took some flyers and she went to the truck stop. And what she did is she just asked the truck drivers if anyone had seen her, kept walking around with the flyers. Doug was given a polygraph, which he passed, so police put him on the back burner. He's not totally cleared, but he seems like he's on the up and up. He came forward and told them about being with her. He's passed the polygraph, so he's not really a suspect.
I wouldn't think.
No. So there were also no sightings of Michelle in Myrtle Beach. Laura began to feel really guilty because she'd sent Michelle away from the house. But then on the show, she blames it on, well, at this time, tough love was a big thing. And that's what I was trying to do.
Yeah. Well, and I don't see any issue with that.
I don't either. I mean, she was 32.
She's 32. She's basically sponging off of her mom.
Well, we don't know that. She did work.
Occasionally.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, it's just that she felt guilty about it. But I could say...
Well, of course she would.
She's been supporting her a long time. And, you know, she was trying to do what was best for her.
Right. So the police became more concerned that harm might have happened to Michelle. There's no record of any credit cards or her bank account being used. The hypothesis was that maybe she'd gotten into a truck with the wrong person, because she's done that before.
Well, yeah, so now they're actually considering that maybe she'd been killed.
Right.
And her body could be in a shallow grave off the interstate somewhere, because the truck driver could have left her anywhere. They're, you know, they're truck drivers. They're all over the place.
They are. And time goes by. The more time, chances are that she'd been killed increase, at least as time goes by that they don't hear anything from her.
Yeah, so her sister Linda started to think that Michelle had been in the wrong place at the wrong time and that something terrible had happened to her. She just thought, well, you know, Michelle has met up with the wrong people before, and I really feel like something bad happened to her. She met up with the wrong person, which seems reasonable, really sad, and she didn't want to believe it, but it does seem like that could be the case.
Right. Now we go forward to a year after her disappearance.
Yeah, now her family's having trouble believing that she's still alive.
Well, yeah.
It's been a long time.
Again, we're at a year. There's absolutely no word from Michelle.
Right.
And we're still looking at no evidence that she's used a credit card or anything. So
no.
There's absolutely no trace.
Right. Laura went to the TV stations and begged them to rerun the story on the news.
Yeah. I mean, even though it's old news, they haven't solved the mystery yet. So whatever publicity you can give us would be appreciated.
Yeah, so on the anniversary every year, they'd bring it up on the local news, right?
Right.
So a few days after Michelle's story ran on the news, police got a call from a fisherman in North Carolina who had seen someone who he thought might be Michelle. The woman he saw was barefoot and kind of had looked like she was having a rough time and appeared homeless. Now, Laura and Linda went to this area and spoke to people on the beach, in restaurants, in stores, and bars. They thought this could be a credible lead because they knew that Michelle liked the beach and it wouldn't be unlike her to be homeless or, you know, kind of fluttering around without a direction.
Right. Now we jump ahead. We're going for 3 years. It's August 2005, and a letter arrives, probably the worst nightmare you could get. The letter showed a hand-drawn map giving a location of Michelle's body, and it was very specific about her body being beside water. The area on the map was about 25 miles from where Michelle was last seen at the truck stop.
Yeah, well, the police felt like this map was very pointed and specific, and it could have been written by someone who knew what happened to her, or possibly even someone who'd been involved in her death. So they took this very seriously.
Yeah, I would, right?
Well, yeah, why wouldn't you? But, of course, it's terrifying for Michelle's family, because if this is true, it's terrible. But then on the other hand, they do want answers. So it's a tough place to be in. So police do go and they search the area that the map had indicated, but they found nothing. Then they had the letter analyzed, and it showed that it had female DNA on it, but there were no fingerprints or clues to who she was or why she had sent this map. Who was this woman, and why would anyone do that? It's just cruel and kind of sick.
Isn't it?
Yeah, and police were becoming very frustrated.
Yeah, because none of their leads are going anyplace.
No.
And they told the family about the map. Linda thought it might have closure, learning where Michelle was buried, but the map was just a sick joke.
Yeah, but Laura was still determined to find her daughter. That didn't dissuade her from continuing to look.
No, she's still on the case.
Yep.
So a couple months later, they arrest a man named Jonathan Vick, and he's arrested for a 1995 rape and murder of a beauty shop owner whose name is Dana Centerfield. This murder occurred about 12 miles from where Michelle was last seen.
Yeah, now Dana was hanged from a pipe off the hot water heater in the back of her beauty shop. Now, it was very vicious, and the news made police wonder if Michelle had known the murderer. Someone had reported that Shelley knew the murderer, her mom said. He'd frequented a diner where she'd worked. Investigators also learned that Vic had an ex-girlfriend who'd gone missing just a month after Michelle went missing. And his ex-girlfriend was a waitress as well, so that's kind of scary.
Yeah, I mean, there's some connections, but they're kind of tenuous to me.
Yeah.
You know, they're both waitresses.
The timing
is about the same. I mean,
yeah.
It's just nothing to me too interesting. But you got to look it over.
Right. Well, I think he was strongly suspected of doing something with the ex-girlfriend, though.
Yeah.
Even though they didn't find her.
But she wasn't found.
No. So now Michelle is gone for 4 years.
Yeah, they're starting to wonder if Michelle could have been one of Vic's victims.
Sure.
But he's not talking, and there's no evidence to connect him to Michelle. But he does go to trial for the murder of Dana.
Yeah, so Laura, she's still thinking he might have done something with Michelle, right?
Right.
So she decides to go to his trial one day and to see what he looks like and what he's like. So she goes and sits in on the trial for a few hours. And she said that he looked kind of like someone who would do bad things. But, I mean, that's not helping her.
No, it isn't.
No.
He looks like he could have done something.
Yeah, you know? Right.
Okay.
She's not really going to learn anything from that. But Vic was convicted, and he was sentenced to life in prison. So yeah. Now we're at 5 years gone for Michelle.
Right. Laura shows us a picture of Michelle that the family used in a vigil that they'd had for her.
Yeah, so at 5 years, they decided to have a vigil because it's been 5 years. She's probably not alive anymore.
Right. They had flowers, pictures of Michelle. Linda wasn't able to speak, but her brother Bruce spoke.
Yeah, there was a lot of family there, and Laura got really choked up when she was talking about this.
Well, yeah. And she created a web page with Michelle's pictures at different ages. She wrote where and when Michelle had last been seen. And then, boom, mystery got solved.
Yes, October 4th, 2008, the mystery is finally solved when a Lieutenant William Guard received a call at the police station.
Right, the caller said that Michelle's alive and well and living in Oregon. Whoa, bombshell.
Yeah, this person said that she was helping take care of foster children, that she'd Googled Michelle's name because I guess she was just fooling around entering some of the kids' names and her name, and they entered Michelle's name, and Laura's website came up. So the woman felt very convinced that this was the same Michelle, and she sent a picture to the policeman in an email, and he looked at it, and he said, "This is definitely Michelle." He'd been looking for her for years. So what he did is he printed the picture, he put a post-it on it, on which he'd written, "Who am I?" And then he showed it to Alan Wood, who knew the family pretty well.
Yeah. And Wood says, "Well, that's Michelle Whitaker. Where'd you get that picture?"
Yeah. So this was pretty amazing, and Michelle looked healthy and happy. Investigators contacted the Oregon State Police to go to her house and check her fingerprints. It was confirmed that she was indeed Michelle. Now, Alan Wood then called Michelle and told her that her family had been looking for her for 6 years. Michelle felt really overwhelmed, and she felt guilty. The last time she'd seen her family, they'd been arguing, and what she'd decided is that they just didn't care if she disappeared, they'd be fine without her. It'd be a relief.
Okay, this is where I'm getting angry.
Angry? Why?
Why she didn't attempt to contact her family.
Okay, well,
That's just such a cruel thing
to
me. And okay. Even if you say, "They don't love me, and I'm better off without them."
Well, they're better off without me, is what she said.
Well, whichever.
Okay.
But wouldn't you at least call them and say, "I'm okay"? Because they've been thinking she could be dead, or probably is dead for all these years.
Yeah, I know.
And how she doesn't do anything to dissuade them from that argument.
And how did she not know? I mean, how did she not know that they were looking for her? All she'd have to do is go online and see that there's a search.
Well, yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know why she did that.
I just think that's terribly cruel to the family.
It doesn't seem right, but, you know, she was a messed up person for a big chunk of that time, although she seems to have gotten herself together.
Then we talk about how she gets to Oregon, she turns her life around. Well, then that's the time to say, "I'm okay."
Yeah. I mean, she could even write a letter, anything.
Doesn't matter what she does, as long as she lets them know that she's alive and well.
Right.
That's all.
I know.
She doesn't have to have anything to do with them.
Right.
But never mind.
It's strange.
I've said my piece.
Now, Michelle talks about her life and what went on since she went missing. And she said her life had been on this downhill spiral, and she decided to leave and try to start over. So she said, "At first I went day to day. I would eat in diners with no way of paying, you know, and just take off. I'd sleep on friends' couches. And then I decided to leave town." Now, she planned to go to Myrtle Beach. I'm not sure why, but she wanted to get a job there, maybe just to be somewhere warm on the beach. But she said she met Doug, and he fed her and gave her some money and dropped her at a truck stop. So that's a little weird, too. Don't you think that she probably had sex with him?
Well, I was just thinking how nice this guy Doug was. And you're thinking she's prostituting herself to get some money.
I don't know. It just seems odd that you meet a guy at a pool hall and you sleep at his house and nothing happens, and then he gives you money and feeds you and drops you off.
Well, I guess I'm just looking at the rosy side of it and thinking, what a great guy Doug is.
See, it usually works the opposite way, where I'm on the rosy side and you're being the cynical one.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
I don't know. I just think that's kind of a weird story.
It is, when you look at it a little more closely.
Yeah.
But I guess I was swept up in the good feelings there.
I mean, Doug didn't seem like he was a missionary or anything.
No, he didn't.
No.
But, you know, he came forward. He could have kept quiet and not said anything to the police.
Oh, yeah, I'm not saying he was a bad guy, but I don't think he wasn't above having sex with her. And not necessarily prostitution, but a one-night stand.
For which she received money.
Well, maybe not payment. Maybe he just gave her some money.
Okay, split hairs.
Yeah. Anyway, I just think that's a little weird. But, I mean, it could be. He just let her sleep there and gave her some money, and that was nice of him.
Maybe he's just a genuinely nice human being.
Maybe. Or she could have been prostituting herself. It wouldn't be that far-fetched.
It wouldn't.
No.
I'll give you that.
Okay. Now, Michelle got a ride with a truck driver, so she's getting in cars and trucks with these different men all the time.
Yep.
And this is after a rape. So, gee, I want to be happy for Michelle, but you're right. She made some really bad choices.
Yes, she did. But somehow she ended up first in Las Vegas, then California, and finally Oregon.
Where she said she turned her life around.
That's right. Well, it sounds like she did. I mean, she's fostering children.
Helping with foster children.
Right. I mean, that's a nice thing.
Absolutely. And she continued to use her real name, but somehow she remained off the grid. She wasn't getting any credit or, you know, using her social security number.
Right.
But Alan, the policeman, told her that her family had gone through all this trying to find her, and she felt really shocked and guilty. And then Alan called Laura, and he told her that they'd found her. She was stunned, and that's when she runs to the sunroom to tell her husband, Chuck.
Yeah.
And she's all teary about that. Wow. So we saw that at the beginning of the show.
That was a moment.
That was a moment for her, exactly. Now, when Linda heard from her mom that Shelley was found alive, she felt like it was unreal. It was an unforgettable moment for her because she thought she'd never see her sister again.
Mm-hmm.
So finally, Michelle did call her mom, but it took her a while.
Yes, it did.
Because why did the policeman have to call her mom? Michelle could have just called her. But she must have been afraid or hesitating in some way.
Yeah, and apparently they left it up to Michelle to do the phoning.
Yeah, but they already told Laura that Michelle was alive.
Right, but they obviously didn't give Laura Michelle's phone number or how to reach her.
True.
Because she had to wait for Michelle to do that.
Right.
So.
Well, that's the way it was with that other episode we watched with the woman in Hawaii.
Yeah, you're right.
The baby who'd grown up.
I guess.
They waited until he was ready to make the call to his father.
It has to be the person's decision.
Right, you can't make them, I guess.
Yeah.
But she did call her mom anyway, and she said she was really scared when she called her because she thought they would. She told her that she thought they'd be happy that she was gone, which, and that's a very immature thing to think.
Well, I mean, she might be, mom might be happy for about 10 minutes, and then she says, "Where's my daughter?" You know?
Well, yeah. And then she'd feel guilty for feeling relieved beforehand.
Yeah.
So it's kind of very short-sighted to think, well, I haven't talked to my family in 6 years. Maybe they're worried. That's kind of strange. So Laura told her no, they'd been going crazy looking for her. They weren't happy. And Laura said she wasn't angry at her, though. She wasn't holding a grudge against Michelle. She was just happy to hear from her, happy that she was alive and well. And a few weeks later, Michelle came to visit her family in North Carolina. And they seemed to have a pretty happy reunion.
They did. I mean, at least as portrayed. We see them sitting on the porch swing. Michelle and her mother are closer than ever. Their relationship is the best it had ever been. So they say. I still don't see how it can be that great a relationship under the circumstances.
Well, I think that they're putting the past behind them.
Well, we hoped.
Because they said, you know, they've worked through these things, and you can't go back and change anything. All you can do is move forward, which is very true. So Linda, the sister, says that her mom and Michelle seem to have worked through most of their problems. And Laura says that Michelle now has a pretty normal life. She has a job, a car, a boyfriend, and presumably a place to live. although they didn't say where she was living, if she was still in Oregon or if she'd moved where they were, did they?
I don't think so. I mean, the sense I get is that she relocated to North Carolina to be close to her family.
Well, that would be weird because she has no desire to see them, and all of a sudden she does.
That's the way I looked at it.
Okay, well, it could be, or they could have just been visiting on the porch swing, and she could go back to Oregon.
That could be, too.
But Laura does say that Michelle has come a long way. So this was just very lacking in any kind of excitement or anything.
Well, if you just look at it, woman disappears, 6 years later resurfaces.
Yeah.
Everything's okay.
Right.
And again, the sense I have is mostly anger that she didn't notify her folks.
Yeah, yeah.
That she was okay. I mean, she doesn't have to have anything to do with them. Just tell them that you're okay.
Right. It was pretty selfish.
It was.
Yeah.
So, I've said enough.
Anyway, I just wonder, what made them decide to make a show about this? I'm not that impressed with the whole story.
With this story?
This story, yeah. The other stories have been better than this.
Yes, they have been.
Yeah. This one, it's just like, not much going on.
No.
Okay, so what else do we know about this case?
I don't know. Well, we do know that on August 5th, 2002, which was before she disappeared.
Yes, yep.
Michelle got mistakenly released from jail instead of attending a court-ordered treatment for drug and alcohol abuse.
Yeah, so there's more going on here than they let on in the show, and that's another irritating thing.
Yeah, I mean, these are contributing factors, right?
Yeah, if you're going to go through the story, be honest about it. Give us some information. It's the same thing with, like, how they kind of glazed over her bad marriage.
Yes.
It's kind of like a human interest story on the local news because they're not giving you any of the real factors, nitty-gritty.
So Michelle is in jail for DUI. And she's supposed to be held in the jail until a bed opened up at a drug rehab center. And she just walked out.
Well, they let her out.
Or they let her out.
And then she'd gone to her mother's after that, I guess. And maybe that's what the fight was partly about when Laura claims she doesn't know what they were really fighting about. Could be that she got out of jail and wasn't going into treatment like she was supposed to.
You know, that's an interesting
Doesn't
point.
That make sense?
Yeah.
So why not put that in the story?
Her mother would say, the hell are you doing here? You're supposed to be in jail or in treatment.
Right. You're supposed to wait in jail until a bed opens up at the treatment center. Yeah.
So there's the fight.
Yeah. Huh. So why not just say that?
Why don't you do that? Yeah.
I don't know why they don't say that. They're trying to make it all happy, hunky-dory, which this is ID. Why are you doing that?
And she certainly was a more troubled person than the show let on.
Yeah. Which we knew, because you don't just do this if everything's fine.
No, you don't.
So a few days after leaving the jail, she was seen walking along a road, apparently drunk, too. And that was before she'd had the fight with her mom and took her things and left the house. And it is true that during the 6 years she was gone, there was no activity recorded by her Social Security number. There was nothing on her credit report. So she used her name, but she did manage to stay off the grid, which makes me wonder why. Makes me wonder if there's more criminal stuff going on here.
Yeah.
So, right. Maybe.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Just not a very satisfying episode.
No. So I believe there's only one more episode of Gone, which we'll do next week.
Well, I'm hoping if it's the final episode that it goes out on a stronger note than the last 2 weeks.
Well, the first couple were good, right?
I enjoyed the first couple.
The girls in South Dakota that were underwater, that was very interesting.
That was an interesting case.
The boy, the baseball-playing boy, was pretty good.
Disappeared and his body wasn't found for years and years. And both of those episodes had the intimation of crappy police work.
They did.
So those were fun.
Even the Hawaiian one wasn't bad.
No. But
this one really was lackluster. So we'll do one next week, and then after that we're switching shows now. There is a show called Grave Something. September.
I was instructed to remember the title, and I fucked up and forgot it.
You remembered half of it.
Well, it's better than nothing. But Grave Something that looked interesting.
So we're going to look into that, and maybe in September we'll do that show.
Okay.
We also have suggestions to do American Monster. There's another one, Grave Secrets, which is pretty cool. I saw an episode of that the other day.
Well, maybe that's what you told me to remember.
No, that's a different one.
Okay.
I think this is a new one.
Maybe it's Grave Secrets returning in September. There, I remembered.
I don't think it is. It could be. Anyway, we're going to do a different show after Gone next week, but do keep your hopes up. Maybe the final episode of Gone will be better.
Maybe.
More mysterious.
We'll see.
I mean, I think that the photography is great. The actors are great that do the reenactments. It's just get a better story.
Yeah.
The story just didn't do much. You can do better than that, producers.
We know you can do better.
Right.
Okay.
So, we're sorry it wasn't more interesting, but we did what we could with what we had. And we'll be back with the final episode of Gone. Even if it's not the final one, I think it's our final one.
It could be.
We're going to be moving on to a different show.
We'll head on to parts unknown.
Yeah.
Except we'll tell you where we're going, so it won't be unknown.
Well, you know, it's a great idea for a podcast, watching ID, because there's all this stuff to watch.
Yep.
So the fact that this show kind of sucked this week is disappointing to me.
Well, yeah.
But it'll get better, so I hope people will keep listening. We're going to find better shows, and it's going to get more interesting.
You know it will.
I do.
Okay.
If you have been listening to Watching ID, we could really use some reviews on iTunes. We only have 6 or 7 reviews, although they're all 5 stars, which is great. So if you enjoy the podcast, we would love a review. And you can also follow us on Twitter at TigerBroPods, on Instagram, and on Facebook. We also, if you don't know, we do a podcast called True Crime Brewery, which comes out every Tuesday. And if you like this one, I think you'll like that one.
Yeah. Or I would say if you like this one, you'll really like the other one.
Well, it's a lot more in-depth than this one. All right. Well, thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Watching ID.
See you guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.